Good evening, folks. You're listening to Trek Track with Satrak, and this is Tricky himself. Welcome to another night. Another week has gone by. It's been an incredible, busy week. I've been swamped with stuff to do. Hopefully, you guys watched and participated in last weekend's ANCA Telethon. They raised over $2 million. It was an amazing event. It was great to see everybody participating, especially down in L.A. It broke my heart. I was supposed to be in L.A. But anyways, lots going on this week, May 28th, this Saturday, with Eli Berberian in Montreal, as well as I want to congratulate Homentman Cambridge for their 35th anniversary. 35th. Tieres un ingamyak, Homentman Cambridge. Անոր համար այս վիկենդ խաղեր դեղի գունենան Cambridge-ի մեջ, Homentman-ի խաղերը և կիչերվա խրախչանքը պիտի խանդավարեն Արարատ Ահարոնյան, a good friend of mine from Lebanon, as well as Canada superstar Խորեն Մուրադյան. Hopefully, whoever is listening to us from Toronto will be attending. I also want to say hi to my cousin, down in Hermosa Beach, Garobo Sajjan, who's always tuning in, who's always listening, who's always jamming on Trick Track. Hi, cousin. I haven't forgotten about the music I'm supposed to send you. Sorry, been swamped like I said earlier. Anyways, on with the show. I have an incredible guest. He's a very old friend of mine back from my days in L.A., Garo Momjan, who's going to talk to us about the Ottoman Empire and World War I. And the conference that he participated at in Sarajevo. So bear with us. We're going to listen to like three songs and then come back and talk to Garo. Hopefully you'll enjoy the songs I picked. One of them is a repeat. I'm just love this song, Harut's new song, Sareri Kamin.
Sareri kamin, vurdeli ses galis, yevureş tavun, anangis dudakur, im sareri kamin. Sareri kamin. Ինչ որ բան շշնջում ու կորչում հեռվում անհանգիստ ու տխուր իմ սարերի քամի Ես գալիս եմ շատ հեռուներից Ավերակ դարձած քո հայրենիքի Եմ ես երկարոտն այն լերներին, որոնց դուք թողել եք, գետի այն ափին Vasil Kamil եւ ինձ լսիր թե ինչ կասեմ Քիչանդարտվի եւ ինձ լսիր թե ինչ կասեմ Որ տանես խոսքերն դու այն լեռներին լեռներին որոնց մենք թողել ենք գետի այն ափին գետի այն ափին գետի այն ափին Քանի մեր վանքերում կնքում ենք մանուկներ Արևի պես ու կրակոտ աչուկներում Քանի մեր աչկերում դեռ չի մարել կարոտը Կարոտը այն, որով նայում ենք մենք հեռվին Ուրեմն մենք, մի օր կգանք ձեր գիրկը դեռ Մեզ սպասող լեռներ, մեզ սպասող լեռներ Մեզ սպասող լեռներ, մեզ սպասող լեռներ Մեզ սպասող լեռներ Mes pas on lerne, mes pas on lerne.
Պանիչ եւ հույս հավատացելոց Քրիստոս Աստված մեր Պահիր պահպանիրս Հայաստան աշխարհս Քեզ հավատացող եւ քեզ հուսացող հայ ժողովուրդս Անթովանյավ սուրբ եւ պատվական խաչի վտքով իղաղության Հրկյա հերևելի եւ աներևույթ ճշնամուին Արժանավորյա գութիան փառավորե Հսկես անթոր եւ ընծրկող քույն Այժմ եւ միշտ եւ հավիտյանս հավիտենից ամեն
Չարչակ, հերոսներդ բեհու արդար, գերդանցում ես հազար տաճար, ուրիշ հելով ունի բերպար, պատմությունը պասմա չարչակ, հերոսներդ բեհու արդար, գերդանցում ես հազար տաճար, ուրիշ հելով ունի բերպար,
սազամի երագույնը, հաղթական է երագույնը, լինին կսոր ու արդական, ուղի հարդենք ես Հայաստան,
Okay, welcome back, folks. As I had stated earlier, we're going to be speaking with an old friend of mine, and I wasn't referring to his age, nor my age, from Los Angeles. Joining us now is Garabet Momjan. Hi, Garo, how are you?
Fine, bro. How are you?
All right. Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Thanks for having me on the show.
It's always a pleasure to talk to good old friends.
Yeah, I remember the old days.
Yeah, the good old days, huh? We used to stay up, long meetings, coffee after coffee. Garo,
exactly.
How'd you end up going to the international conference? And who organizes this conference in Sarajevo?
By the way, this is the third installment of conferences that has been organized during the past 3 years. The first one was about the Ottoman Empire and the Berlin Conference of 1878. The second one, that was in 2010. The second one was about the Balkan Wars of 1912-1913. That was last year, in 2011. And this one was the Ottoman Empire and World War One. Interestingly enough, there are several entities who are involved in the organization. The main person who organizes these events, these conferences, is Professor Hakan Yavuz from the University of Utah, Salt Lake City. He is a political scientist, but very interested in the last period of the Ottoman Empire, including the problematic issues concerning the Balkans and also Eastern Anatolia, including the Armenian question and ultimately the Armenian genocide. So there are also other entities like Yeni Tepe University in Istanbul, who was also involved in the programming, etc.
Okay, so basically, it's this professor from Utah that organized this whole conference.
Not only him, but also a whole department that he has a department of Turkish studies, which is involved in this. They are now, as you know, during the past decade or so, there is this somewhat I don't know the term, Suvar Bazucun, within the Kurdish community at large, regarding what was the history that they were not taught, and especially during this new government in Turkey, lots of issues are being put forward. This was one of the avenues through which we are trying to make the Turkish people, especially the Turkish intellectuals, aware of where their history was and what it was. And I think that we are, little by little, gaining more mileage, as you say.
Okay, and who else gets invited to this thing?
This was an international conference. There were about 80 people who talked from all around the world and from different disciplines, not only historians like me, diplomatic historians, but there were also political scientists, there were also sociologists, there were also cultural anthropologists, gender studies experts, you name it. I mean, it was a big one, and I don't think that any such gathering of academics for this special topic has ever been arranged before this.
And who were the other Armenians that were with you?
Well, there was Dr. Joe Kishishian, who is an expert Arabist, who participated, and he also gave a talk about the politicization of the CUP after the 1913 Balkan defeats. Why did they become more nationalistic, and why did they, for example, since they lost in the Balkans and there were lots of Muslims or Turks killed there, why did they use that to take revenge from another Armenian population, in this case the Armenians? She was looking into that issue. There was also until Yerevan became that backwater town, became the capital of Armenia, of the Republic of Armenia. Myself included, I was talking about the period 1909 to 1914, what was the relations between the Ittihad ve Terakki and the Tashkent Sütun. Apparently I found some new stuff, some new archival materials regarding an underground Ittihad ve Terakki ARF cooperation regarding the constitutional revolution in Iran between 1909 and 1912, and then suddenly Tsarist Russia, which was oppressing the ARF, suddenly comes up with a new program of reform for Armenians. Why was the timing done in 1912 at the exact moment when the Ottoman Empire was losing the war in the Balkans, etc.? What I mean to say, etc., is that until now we have had linear histories written by the historians by a group of historians who came before us. Now, because of the internet, because of the duplicity and the widespread internet thing and archives being accessible, and also because of people who know the languages, such as myself, because I read Ottoman and I can do research in Ottoman, and I've done it for since 2005 when the archives opened. We can come up with new paradigms in history and write a more detailed history that gives more explanation about what happened and why it happened, if I'm able to explain myself.
And you said something interesting there, where you mentioned about some underground archives, if I understood you correctly.
The archives. I found archives, Ottoman archives, and I found Tashkent Sütun archives, for example, which speak about an under, like behind the curtain cooperation between the ARF and the Ittihad Party, and in Iran, for example, during the time that Iran was fighting for a constitutional government. So how come that two people or two parties that were cooperating with each other until 1912, suddenly in 1914 they become enemies, and to the extent that they want to exterminate each other, you know?
Yeah.
So these are things that have to be answered yet, and we find that there is lots of Russian duplicity there, because the Russians did not like the approach that the Armenians and the CUP, the Ittihad ve Terakki, were doing in terms of creating a constitutional government in Turkey. Neither were they happy that the same was happening in Iran. And so Russia and Great Britain in 1907 had an agreement, and this agreement was that they would do everything they could possible in order to make this new the two experiments in constitutional government not to succeed. And it follows that by not letting this experiment succeed, it finally led to the rupture between the Young Turks and the Armenians, and it follows that the Armenian genocide was one of the byproducts also of this Russian-British, collusion.
Okay. And where'd you come up with, where'd you find this archive? Was it in Sarajevo or somebody presented it?
No. The archives I'm speaking about are the archives of the ARF. Most of them are published, by the way. We have now 9 volumes of the archives published. And also, I have gathered some of them before. The ARF archives are now in a situation where they are preparing it to have it online for researchers. And as for the Ottoman archives, I was able to get those when I was doing research in Istanbul at the Başbakanlık Osmanlı Arşivi, which is the place that houses the Ottoman archives, at least the political part of the archives. There is also another archive in Turkey. This is in Ankara, which is called Atase, and that is the military archive.
And what did the others present?
There were lots of pieces that were presented there. I paid hours, but let me just give you an example. One of the issues that the Turkish government has always used against us was that we Armenians did not want to fight in the army, and we defected from the Ottoman army. Now there is a Turkish professor who came and presented a paper where he, according to the archives that he found, the rate of desertion in the Ottoman Empire was the highest among all the nations that were participating in the war. It reached 30%, which means if the Turks are saying Armenians deserted, they should first look into why the Turks deserted, and then come and ask us, why did you desert, you know? And this is something new. Then there were other professors like Ayhan Attar, for example, who presented a local history of Diyarbakir during the genocide. And these are very new stuff. I mean, there is a new generation of Turkish historians who are asking the hard questions, who are coming up with archival material, who do not like the history or the historiography that was offered to them, and they are rewriting the history. And most of these guys are very familiar with what really happened to the Armenians, and they have the guts to come out and say in front of their foreign ministry representatives that the history you are trying to formulate or give to the people is the wrong history, and as long as you continue like this, you won't be able to get into some sort of a solution with the Armenians regarding what happened in 1915.
Okay, and what happens, let's say, when somebody presents, is there animosity between the presenters, or everybody respects one another even though you don't agree with what he's saying?
Look, we are living in the 21st century, Cedra. We should be able to accommodate each other. We might have issues that we are different, we have different approaches, or we think differently from one another, but there are also lots of things that we agree upon. So the most important thing is that we should have this kind of academic convergence going on, and we should talk with each other. I learn a lot from my Turkish colleagues because they do great research in the archives. And they learn a lot from me because they have a problem with Armenian archives. There is only one person whom I met who knows Western Armenian, and he took 4 years to study it. There are many young Turk scholars today, historians, who want to learn Armenian. On the other hand, I haven't seen yet any new generation of Armenian historians who are well-versed or are trying to learn Ottoman Turkish, unfortunately. And we have apparently lots of other things to think about, and nobody is thinking about where and when to raise a new generation of Armenian Ottomanists, because it is very critical and important that we have it. Unfortunately, we don't have it.
And what would you suggest that we do?
Well, I've spoken about this long and thing from Lebanon all the way here. The thing is that neither the government in Armenia nor the institutions in the diaspora are coming up with any funding for this kind of a project. Imagine that we had about 8 students in Armenia who were studying Ottoman through a professor who comes one semester a year from St. Petersburg. In Armenia, there is no Ottomanist expert at the University of Yerevan, for example. We used to have that during the Soviet times. Unfortunately, during the independence days, there are lots of fields where we don't have the specialist at the university over there. And the government apparently is following other stuff rather than this important stuff. What can we do? But the issue remains. We need a new generation of Arabists, we need a new generation of Ottomanists, and we are not preparing those. And once there is a generation gap, then it's very hard to come up with this, even if you wanted to do that 20, 30 years from now, because the discipline would have been lost on us.
Yeah, but you know, I find our youth today, they're indifferent in some ways. And it will be hard, really difficult for us to convince them or to tell them, listen, you could choose this path, you can choose this avenue to become a historian or a researcher, or like you said, we don't have any of that. And I think it's based on their interest as well. You don't think so?
No. Let me tell you something. There is about 2,800,000 people living in Armenia. Okay, let me take the other side of the coin. Look at how many Armenian studies chairs we have established in the diaspora. Look at the United States, for example. Okay? How many chairs can you count? I can count about 12 to 15. How many graduate students do we have right now who are doing graduate study in Armenian history, in Ottoman language, in this kind of stuff? Our generation, my generation, seems to be the last who devoted their careers for this kind of a thing. I don't blame the new generation when they don't want to go into this kind of disciplines, because first of all, aberrante, ungraceful. Yeah, we have learned because other majors, other fields make you get a lot more money than when you are a historian. But the thing is, there is always the possibility in Armenia of the 2.8 million people that you will have a group that will be dedicated and would want to do it. The only thing is, there should be people. And when I'm saying people, it's not only the government, but also the NGOs and other institutions who should back those people and find the funding for them to go and study the languages, the disciplines that are needed for our next generation. The problem with our Armenian academicians is that most of them don't even know English, which is the lingua franca of the academic community today.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We're going to listen to a song and then come back and continue our talk. Hopefully people will stay tuned. Okay, folks, welcome back. For those of you just joining us, we're talking with Gautam Omjan from Los Angeles, who was just at the Sarajevo conference on the Ottoman Empire and World War I. Lots of interesting stuff was said. However, I have a question to Gautam. Recently, there's a lot of talk about Armenian and Turkish relations. What shall we understand with that when they're talking, when they're saying relations?
You opened the can of worms, Seto, but I will try to give you a very concise assessment of what's happening so that your listeners can also have an idea. The Turkish government, especially this Islamist Turkish government, the AK Party, has for the past 10 years tried, or is still trying, to approach Armenians both in Armenia and also in the diaspora in terms of wanting to have some sort of a, some sort of a rapprochement, some sort of a dialogue. We Armenians are a little bit afraid of this because we always have in the back of our minds that those Turks are the hard bastards, and they always, if they are coming to us with a very sweet language, there is something in the back of their mind and they are going to undermine us or something, you know. There is always this problem. It has been there. I can't disagree with it. There is also the problem of 100 years of an unresolved genocide issue. But at some point, we have to think about solutions to those issues. We can't go on forever by telling our young people this is the situation and having them generation by generation devote all their energies into the issue of the recognition of the Armenian genocide, because we have lots of other stuff, God knows what, a country to build, this and that, and we should also be able to put some work into those areas, which means that there is a problem of solving the genocide issue, and in the 100 years after the genocide, from what I see is that there is now a government in Turkey who is different from all those governments that came before it. Now, how much sincere it is, I don't know. I'm not looking into a crystal ball, you know. But on the other hand, I don't think also that we have to lose an opportunity that is presenting itself. Now, the issue was that the Turkish government always denies that there has been no genocide. It were massacres. They were massacres, and that there were also other Turks who were also massacred. This and that. Now we are little by little making them understand that this nationalistic approach to history that their government has implemented during the last decades is not working. There are lots of young Turks now who are speaking about the event. There are lots of people who come from Armenian backgrounds who were Islamized during the genocide or even before the genocide. So there is an opportune moment now that we have to be able to grasp. Am I making myself understood, Seto?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What this means is that there is a problem in terms of if Turkey wants to go and have dialogue with Armenia, Armenia has an address. Armenia has a government, okay? The problem is that that government cannot take a decision regarding this issue without the diaspora. And here, when we use the word diaspora, here comes the big problem. Who represents the Armenian diaspora? Okay? Now, one of the issues of the diaspora is that the diaspora has tried for the past three, four decades to come up with a representative body of sorts, and all the projects that came in this regard were all faltered. None of them succeeded. And even today, if they want to come up, the different organizations, the different churches, the different denominations, if they want to come and create a united body that represents the will of the Armenian diaspora, it's a very hard thing to establish. So this is a problem that we have. We have a problem in front of us that is the creation of a united body that represents the Armenian diaspora. If we are going to have dialogue with the enemy or with the other side, we should be able to have a representative body. Without a representative body, we can't do it. Do you agree with me?
Okay, yeah, to a certain extent.
Okay, but there is no such body. How can the Armenian diaspora create such a body if and when we know that it is so fragmented between political parties, between different denominations, and now you have the old thinking versus the new thinking, and put all those together and you have a mishmash which you can't even get through. So one of the issues that we have is how can we come up with a representative body that would really represent the diaspora, and this body will tell the Turkish government, look, if you want to speak to the Armenian diaspora, this is the address of the Armenian diaspora. It is this united body that represents the will of the Armenian diaspora.
But on the other hand, like a few years ago, the president, when we saw he was doing the protocols, he came and toured the diaspora.
He came in what?
He came and toured in the diaspora. Let's say he came to the States.
What did the diaspora tell him? See, we are very good in terms of reacting to issues, reacting to events. Okay? When the Armenian government went ahead with the protocol project, the Armenian diaspora stood up very easily. Okay? In terms of, we don't want this, and you don't have the right to do it. Okay, that's very good. Yeah, but I'm thinking about the other side. Okay, if the Turkish government wants to come and talk with you rather than with the Armenian government, who is he going to talk to? Because if he talks to the Hanchars, the Tashnars will have a problem. If he talks to the Tashnars, the Hanchars will have a problem. If he talks to the Ramdavar, the other two will have a problem. If he talks to the Echmiyaznagan church, the Antlias church will have a problem. Are you getting the picture?
Yeah, I get the picture. But do you really think that we can have a fair representation?
Look, I am the historian. I am only giving you the issue. I am not a political scientist.
Yeah, no.
But if you want my opinion, I think enough is enough. I mean, there are people who have been sitting on those organizations for so long that they should start giving their places to young people, to young professional people. Maybe the young professional people, if they from the different organizations, churches, etc., when they come and talk with each other, they could come to an agreement. I don't know. I mean, if we don't try something, we don't try something, you know? The current situation is a stagnant situation, and we are in a quagmire.
Yeah, well, often we say nor seruntu, we talk to the youth, we tell them tugek merabakan, tugek merabakan, and so on and so forth. No, we're not, because some people that
we should give them the chance while they are in their youth and they have the energy to spend their capital on this kind of communal activity.
I couldn't agree with you on that one more, Garo.
Well, for some people this is heretical, unfortunately. What I'm speaking, it's heretical. They would always say, who said we are not giving importance to our new generation? Well, I'm saying lip service is not giving importance to the new generation. When I look around, I don't see them in the leadership positions. That tells me that the new generation, which is more professional, which has been raised in a country and have the education, university education, graduate education, but I'm not seeing them around. What they are doing, okay, instead of the traditional organizations, they are doing and forming their own organizations, which is creating more division and more stratification within the community.
A few weeks ago, I had a Professor Ungur on, and he said something interesting, which it's still...
Good friend. is one of the examples I'm speaking to you about. Turkey has a new generation of historians like Umut, and I could count like 20 of them right now. But he's a very good representative of what I was trying to convey, okay?
And what he said was very interesting, because I asked him, I said, do you ever see that the Turkish government will ever accept or acknowledge the Armenian genocide? He goes, what do you think they're doing now? He goes, they're behind their doors and talking about this issue, because this issue is not going to go away.
Yes, my friend, I know that too, because I am, somehow they talk to me too. And yes, I see a sincere effort on their side that they want to do something. What is that something? I still don't know, okay? But it can only, you need two to tango, Seto. They can do it alone, we can do it alone. For 100 years, our nationalists and their nationalists have fought each other. But have we arrived at any solution? No. If it was 100 years more like this, we would have no change, and it will go like this. If you ask me, the nationalism on both sides has become a business, you know?
Okay.
And it's very hard for people to come out from their nationalist skin. Now, here is the part where a new generation from both sides can play a very pivotal role in terms of trying to solve this issue. If there is a time when the Turkish government or the Turks can accept the genocide, maybe this is it. I don't, maybe in 10 years this government would go and another nationalist government would come and the whole, we will lose it again for another 50, 60 years. I don't know, you know?
And there's another issue that we don't talk often about it, and which is the monetary issue, the repetition. That what if tomorrow Turkey acknowledges the Armenian genocide? And
yes, there's always been the issue of the reparation, the issue of Armenia, the deaths of Armenians during the genocide, and also the issue of Armenian confiscated properties, etc. I'm very confident in those things. But the first issue, I mean, all those issues are issues that have to be dealt with later. If there is no dialogue between the two parties to start the process, where do you think these issues are going to be talked about?
Yeah, but don't you think that we should be discussing those things within ourselves as well? Because I don't remember ever discussing these issues in any of the meetings.
Well, no, you have been discussing this issue because we have been raised and indoctrinated, in a sense, in the issue that Turkey has to pay for everything it did. The Ottoman Empire, I mean. Turkey has to pay for everything that the young Turk government of the Ottoman Empire did. Now, I'm not an expert on diplomacy or on negotiations, okay? But it seems that there are some other journalists who have, like Haluk Sasunian, who was advocating the other day, that maybe the two governments can form a commission of sorts, okay? A commission, not the historians' commission, because I don't believe in it. When was it that the politicians had asked the historians to solve a political issue, by the way? So it's a full problem from the start. Now, a commission of diplomats who know the language of diplomacy, who know how to negotiate, maybe they can come together and find a solution for this. There are issues. There are precedents, like the Jewish Holocaust. Somehow ramifications were paid. Okay? Now, in our case, the ramifications are not only personal property and debt, but there is also and communal property, by the way, church property, etc. But we also have some sort of a land issue within Turkey, not in terms of property, but within a historical, within the context of a historical hierarchy or a historical homeland. Now, all those issues are very important issues. But the thing is, all those issues come in after negotiations start. But if you want to speak about the issue within Armenians, I think one of the issues that divide Armenians mind too. And this also creates a problem within Armenians in the diaspora. And also within Armenians in Armenia.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Let's not take them out of the equation altogether. So you see how problematic, you see how the complexity of the situation we are living in. And this kind of complexity also needs very bright minds in order to be able to find solutions to these complex issues that I just enumerated.
Yeah, they're complex, but we need to discuss them. We need to talk about them. If we don't talk, if we don't raise these issues, nobody gives a damn. You know, nobody's going to care about it. Well, some people do care, but
I agree with you about that. And this means, yes, we are far behind in terms of what did we do during the 100 years. Now you would say, or somebody would say, all we tried to do was to go and fight in front of the governments of the world in terms of acknowledging the Armenian genocide. The Armenian, for example, take the example of the Armenian genocide in the U.S. Senate. Now Arabarian comes up and says, it was already accepted in 1953. Well, it was also accepted in the 1980s when President Reagan announced it, you know?
Yeah.
But we still went ahead for 25 more years, okay? And worked hard every year, in order to get a new, resolution passed. Why should we have done all that, okay, while there were lots of other steps that we could do, you know? Americans are not going to give us that resolution, okay, they will use us like the British used us, like the French used us, like the Russians used us, for their own aims.
True. I mean, do you think if we...
It was good in a sense to politicize our youth, you know, but there are other means in politicizing our youth too, you know. There are other means, so I'm not saying not to cut off that work altogether, but it shouldn't have been our only objective. That's what I'm trying to say. Now, for example, we have a very good component to it being added by the ANCA, which they announced during the last telethon they did. Now they said we are going to fully pledge ourselves to the issue of Armenian churches in Turkey and bringing them back to the ownership of the Armenian Patriarchate in Constantinople or in Boris. This is a very important issue, okay? Which speaks to my heart too, and you will find lots of young people who would come and help the ANCA for this project, for example. Because it's something rigid, you can touch it.
Yeah, and would this be the topic that we would be discussing with you in the near future? The confiscated properties?
I'm writing a book about this. I got I translated all the laws from Ottoman Turkish. I gave a lecture, it's on YouTube, by the way, by ARPA organized the lecture, but I would really, really like to talk about it on this show too. So whenever we have time, so we can talk about it and find a date that suits both of us, and we can do that too.
Sure, it'd be a pleasure to talk about it with you again.
Umut started it by speaking about Diyarbakir, but I'm going to speak about Armenian properties all over the Ottoman Empire. That would be the difference between my approach and his approach, because he writes a local history, okay? While in my case, I'm writing a totalitarian history, in a sense, involving the laws about abandoned properties. By the way, they call them abandoned properties. I call them confiscated properties. No, they were not abandoned at will. So how can you say they were abandoned?
Yeah. Okay, well, I think we pretty much covered a lot of stuff tonight. I don't know if you have anything to add.
No, my friend, I mean, I was talking non-stop for 45 minutes. I think I have to rest a little bit now, huh?
Yeah, you could take a break. Well, it was a pleasure having you, Garo. It's always good to talk to old friends, like I said earlier. And you're welcome anytime you have anything to say. Just let me know. And we'll hook
it
up.
Same with you, my friend. I hope your listeners also enjoyed it. If that is so, let them write to you or email you, and we'll have a better understanding of what are the things they want to hear about. And we are ready to do that.
Yeradze. Thank you and have a great evening, my friend.
You too, my friend. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, folks, we just heard from Garo Mumjan, and it was really, really pleasure talking to him. Now I'm going to leave you with some songs and then come back and wish you good night. So stay tuned.
Me.
լավ սիրելիներ, այսպեսով հրաժեշտ կառնեմ ձեզ մեզ եւ հույսով եմ կդեսնվինք, դեսնվին չէ, բայց կլսեք ինձի կալինք շաբթի օրը. Have a great weekend. Don't forget two celebrations this weekend, one in Montreal, Eli Berberian, Mayıs 28-ի դոնագադարություն, and Cambridge, 35th anniversary of Hometman Cambridge. Ararat Aharonian from Lebanon and Khoren Murajan. Hopefully you guys will go and have fun. Have a great weekend and talk to you next week, folks.
Oh.